saw some people the other day crying, oh, I don't know, Trump has removed money. He said he's not giving us any more money. Watu wanalia. Why are you crying? It's not your government, it's not your country.
That's Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta speaking in January, days after U.S. President Donald Trump froze all overseas foreign aid, followed by an immediate stop work order for all recipients of U.S. foreign aid. A decision with far-reaching consequences on the African continent.
He has no reason to give you anything. You don't pay taxes in America. He's appealing to his people. This is a wake-up call for you to say, okay, what are we going to do to help ourselves? Instead of crying, what are we going to do? Yeah? To support ourselves. Because nobody is going to continue holding out a hand there to give you. It is time for us to use our resources for the right things. We are the ones who are using them for the wrong things.
Using them for the wrong things. Eric Olander, editor-in-chief of the China Global South Project, agrees with Kenyatta. He said that there is enough money in Africa for Africans to help themselves. But the root of the problem is bad governance.
There is a lot of frustration over the unwillingness and inability for African governments to pay for basic services. Governance comes down to be one of the critical issues, and I assure you that a majority of young African people in Kenya, in Nigeria, in Ghana, in South Africa would 100% agree with that sentiment, that their leaders are the problem.
For years, Africa has received more aid money from the United States than any other region. According to the United Nations, the U.S. is, or was, the single largest aid donor in the world. In 2023, it spent $71.9 billion in foreign aid. That represents only 1.2% of its entire budget for that fiscal year. And sub-Saharan Africa received around $12 billion in aid, which went to health, economic development, humanitarian aid, peace and security, democracy, governance, and more. Created in 1961, USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development, was the main outlet for the distribution of funds. Earlier this year, it was dismantled by the Trump administration and incorporated into the State Department. Trump accused USAID of waste and fraud. Olander maintains that the White House and critics of USAID in Africa share the same views.
There were a lot of undeniably good things about what USAID did, and I think a lot of people on the continent would acknowledge that. But there were also a lot of problems. And at the same time, for all the money that USAID committed, we didn't see a lot of the advances in health outcomes that I think a lot of people think should have been there. And then at the same time, you see, for example, in a lot of countries that there was a certain form of dependency. Some health budgets were being paid for by USAID, not by the host government. And there's a lot of frustration that people on the continent justifiably said, this is something that we should do ourselves. And ironically, that is in line with what the Trump administration is saying.
Here's President Trump highlighting how federal funds have been spent overseas in a speech to Congress in March.
$40 million to improve the social and economic inclusion of sedentary migrants. Nobody knows what that is. $8 million to promote LGBTQI+ in the African nation of Lesotho, which nobody has ever heard of.
Lesotho, a country no one ever heard of? Mark Haywood is a rights and social justice activist in South Africa. This is his take on Trump's overseas aid cuts.
What was striking was just the cruelty, the callousness, the ease with which, with a stroke of the pen, they could cut off life-saving healthcare services to people. And almost you got a sense that they found it funny what they were doing. This side of the world, it doesn't look funny. The money that America was providing was not charity. It's part of an international obligation for living on this planet that rich countries give assistance to poor countries.
So how bad has it been for the people in Africa since the US decided to slash overseas aid? Chris Milligan is a former Foreign Service officer at USAID.
I am particularly struck by a USAID worker. She wrote me and she said, "The mother nearly killed me. We had to say there are no more medications, and you have to look into a child's eye and know you have signed their death warrant." So this is just one example, but it's an example that's being multiplied across the continent. And it's not just in health. It's in access to education and social services. It's in support for economic development and agriculture. 47% of USAID's budget in Africa was for humanitarian assistance. So it's about the welfare of hundreds of thousands of people who are internally displaced people or refugees who now can access food and medicine and water. The effects are, I'm saying, catastrophic, actually.
The effects will also be felt home, he says. Aid to Africa is also an investment in the security of the United States. Chris Milligan.
The United States provides development and humanitarian assistance because we are a generous country, but also because it's in our national interest. We know that a stable and prosperous and a healthy world is good for the United States. The stability created in Africa accelerates American trade. In fact, we had recently, under one program, it had 3,000 deals between U.S. and African companies, which had generated $130 billion in trade. But I would like to ask a question. What does a world without USAID look like to the United States? It's a world with more conflict. It means more migrants coming to the United States and to Europe. It's a less free world because support for free and fair elections has stopped. So it's a world really of more conflict, pandemics, less prosperity, more poverty, and growing authoritarianism. And it's a world where China is the lead political and economic power, assuming the mantle the United States has thrown off. But more further than that, though, it also impacts our economy. We are able to address outbreaks of agricultural pests and diseases before they come to the United States and wipe out our crops. We also export $2 billion of our own agriculture in humanitarian assistance. We export $1 billion in pharmaceuticals, USAID does. So this is already having an impact, economic impact back home as well.
In South Africa, home to the largest number of people living with HIV/AIDS in the world, Mark Haywood said that Trump's decision to suppress foreign aid is a disaster. Not only for the 15,000 people who immediately lost their jobs, but also because numerous services can no longer be provided. In South Africa, 8 million out of a population of 60 million are HIV positive. 6 million of them need to take antiretroviral drugs every day. And a blow to South Africa's healthcare system, it is also a blow to neighboring countries and beyond.
There's a stronger probability of developing drug resistance because people are not taking their medicines, means the stronger probability of drug-resistant HIV spreading outside of South Africa to other African countries and indeed across the world. Poorer management of tuberculosis, which benefits from HIV treatment, means more extraordinarily drug-resistant tuberculosis. So it has an impact on global health as well as on South African health. You know, our country, of course, has its borders, but historically it's very completely intertwined with neighboring countries, with Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Lesotho, Swaziland. Millions of people come to our country for healthcare. Millions of people come to our country for jobs. When medicines dry up in Zimbabwe, as they are today, because of the withdrawal of this funding, Zimbabweans cross the border to seek access to treatment in South Africa. But South Africa's ability to treat is diminishing as well. So those are the kind of multiple knock-on effects that we are already feeling.
Meanwhile, Rwanda's President Paul Kagame sees the current havoc as an opportunity to take control.
Africa now finds itself at a crossroads. The health financing landscape has shifted dramatically. We should not be daunted by this. The work to build our continent, including our health, cannot be outsourced to anyone else. Current events are therefore an invitation for us to take full ownership of our challenges and find alternative ways of addressing them.
President Kagame is referring to alternatives to the financial aid received from the U.S., upon which many African nations are highly dependent on. Dr. Onikepe Owolabi is the Vice President of International Research at the Guttmacher Institute in New York. She says that the U.S. has pulled out so quickly that countries had no time to put in place any alternatives.
The reason why these countries have not traditionally been able to invest significantly in their own health sector is because they're low-income countries. And so they don't have the time they need to mobilize those financial resources. Unfortunately, I think that it's going to take a lot of time to get these countries back to a place of comfort. I think that there are going to be very many people who do not access healthcare. And indeed, in some countries like Uganda, where there's a high prevalence of HIV, there will be many deaths and many lives lost due to this aid pullout. I think that the solution is complicated, and we will require many actors to step in many ways over the next 5 to 10 years to put these countries in a position where people can access essential health care again. It's very hard to turn the tide. These countries have received aid for a long time for historical and colonial reasons, and you can't expect them to recover in 6 months when someone suddenly pulls the plug.
So how to fill in the gap left by the world's largest donor? At an African Union summit last February, the continent's leaders met to discuss domestic health financing. President Kagame unveiled a continent-wide strategy to be more self-reliant.
I propose that over the next year, we work together to define new mechanisms for concrete collaboration on healthcare among governments, business, and philanthropies, and draw more and more actors in these efforts. I ask that our African Union health bodies lead us in this work.
Putting African resources at the center of African health. Dr. Owolabi agrees with President Kagame's idea of a three-pronged mechanism for African public health funding.
Over the next few years, governments are going to have to come together in sub-Saharan Africa and think of how they can increase the amount of money they have. This includes increasing their tax base, so finding ways to innovatively tax people so that they have more money to spend on healthcare. It might be possible for the private sector to step in and do things like increase the number of people getting health insurance so that people are able to contribute more towards their own healthcare and aren't paying out of pocket. I think we're going to have to look to the private sector to do things like procure drugs, procure essential medical commodities like testing kits, and if possible, reach agreements with governments where they can supply them at subsidized amounts. So I don't think it's an easy fix. We're going to have to make sure that their economies are not largely dependent on one single donor ever again.
A small Kenyan organization, Kisumu Medical and Education Trust, KMET, no longer relies on American federal funds. Because of a global gag rule imposed by Trump during his first term in 2017, this is where recipients of U.S. aid are forbidden to provide counseling on abortion. KMET was then defended. Monica Ogutu, the founding executive director of KMET, says they decided to opt out and partner with local NGOs to pool their resources while working with local government and overseas foundations, mostly for research. Ogutu says KMET is run like a business and does not depend on overseas aid. Even though Kemet is not directly affected by Washington's decision, it has to deal with the vacuum left by US-funded NGOs.
So this time, I must say that we are indirectly affected. Although we were not receiving USAID funding, but the way we work in Kenya again is through integrated approaches. So on the ground, we work together. The other partners that have been receiving USAID funding, who have since left, they have created a huge vacuum. So we had to come up with local, you know, solutions to mitigate the gap. So the first thing first, we realized that we are quite a number of local NGOs, and we have said that whatever little we have, we are going to see how best to utilize it and mitigate the situation. We had our meetings as the local NGOs and came up with a plan of action and then reached out to the county governments.
So where is your fund coming from?
So two things. Once we realized that we cannot rely so much on external funding alone, we prioritized one to mobilize resources locally. So we have our own Kemet SACCO microfinance facility, which we started with membership paying and having a revolving fund. Two, we have a very strong public-private partnership, but the priority going forward, I must say, we are strengthening advocacy to use domestic resources.
If it were feasible on a small scale like Kemet to be self-reliant and not depend on one main donor, why is it not possible on a larger scale at a state level? Eric Hollander says it is not because there is not enough money in Africa, but it is siphoned elsewhere.
Last year, $88.7 billion of illicit financial flows left the continent, and that is more than enough to cover all of the healthcare needs across the continent, a lot of the infrastructure needs. But let's remember that not all of that money that's leaving the continent is because of Africans themselves who are illicitly taking it out. European multinationals, French multinationals, American multinationals are evading taxes and not paying their fair share. And when you look at the amount that Australian mining companies alone take from the continent and what they put back in the form of financial assistance, development assistance, it is shocking. Okay. So at the end of the day, there is money, there are resources available, but they have to be tied to better governance. So Paul Kagame and President Kenyatta and even President Ruto are absolutely right that these are things that should be done by host governments. But at the same time, host governments have got to do better at clamping down on illicit financial flows, doing better on tax collection in order to harness the resources that are there to provide these basic services.
The people I spoke to agree that there are more than enough resources for African nations to work together and fill in the massive gap left behind when the United States stopped overseas aid. Solutions have been tabled. To lead the way, there are even African aid organizations which exist without US federal funds. Never again, say the people of Africa, will they depend on one single donor and be subjected to its whims. Thank you for listening to RFI. This report was recorded and mixed by sound technician Erwan Rome. And it's goodbye from me, Zenith Hansrode.